Hey there, it's Lacey J from Space Bear Media, the makers of Lost in My 40s. Did you know that Space Bear Media also has a YouTube page where you can go to watch a video pre-show before every podcast episode? If you haven't watched it yet, stop, go there, do so, and then come back. Everybody, welcome to episode 4 of Lost in My 40s. This is a lock episode entitled Walkabout, and Ben is going to be taking over the description of this episode for us. But everybody is here. Hi, guys.
Hello.
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 All right, Ben, I know you're really dying to do that Australian accent. So do you want to start us off on Locke's episode?
Yeah, and I just want to say it's not walkabout, it's walkabout.
Okay.
You just got to get that, just at least that word. Okay, so this one starts off in sort of a semi-flashback from when they first get on the island where Locke is laying on the beach, and there is just screaming and all kinds of bedlam going on around him. He kind of gazes down at his toes, and his toes are wiggling. Obviously, some foreshadowing they're calling attention to. So then when we actually start in the present time, we're at day 4, it's actually nighttime on the beach, and the castaways look over as Vincent barks loudly, probably for unsated taste for human flesh. But at that time, another noise catches their attention, and there's rustling and roars are heard coming from the fuselage. Jack moves to investigate with the rest of the group, but the creatures inside begin to move toward him, and the group begin to scatter and run for their lives. With the whole camp sort of flustered, Locke steps forward to provide an explanation. In his sort of simple way, he just says the creatures are, in fact, boars.
I love that when Jack screams run, Hurley's like, oh, crud, now what?
I wrote down Locke is creepily excited about pigs. Anybody else notice the look on his face? They make him, it's like, in these early episodes, it's literally like, any time they can get a shot of Locke looking suspicious, they do. Even when he's just like, it's about food. No, why does he look like, what does he want to do to that pig? It just doesn't look right. Oh, anyways.
Yeah, I've noticed he has that odd stare in several scenes.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They love the Locke stare, I guess, is all I'm trying to say.
It's his thirst for blood.
And the big giant pig, the boar, it kind of reminded me, in a weird way, I don't know what, the festival scene from Willow popped into my head. I just was like hoping that there would be more. Do you guys know what I'm talking about, right?
Yes.
Yeah. You're all staring at me like, okay, well, I guess never mind.
We see that movie differently. I've never really been that big of a Willow fan. I know that's sacrilege to some.
I know. I married you anyway.
I mean, as far as a Val Kilmer vehicle goes, it's pretty solid, but like, the movie itself doesn't stand up to, like, The Princess Bride and some of the other movies from that era.
That's baloney. Okay. Move on. I'm sorry I brought it up.
Though, when I was watching this and the boars came out, I could see, like, Mariotic standing there, and I kind of half expected Locke to go, salted pork. So everyone's still a little shaken. Some of the survivors start discussing the situation in the fuselage with the pigs. The remains of the dead are rotting in the sun. Actually, at this point, I think it's still nighttime. So in the moonlight, they think that it's probably going to attract wildlife, as rotting human flesh tends to do. Jack kind of puts forward the sort of truth that the bodies need to be burned, I think, you know, from a doctor's standpoint, it's like, yeah, rotting bodies is not just going to attract animals, but it's like disease and all kinds of bad shit can come of that.
It really stinks.
Yeah, that was the other thing. It's like, it wouldn't take 3 days to be like, Jesus Christ, this is awful. Yeah. Like, we're literally
on day four, it's got to be brutal.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I wrote down in my notes, I'm on Jack's side. It's just bodies. Get the fuck over it.
Yeah.
I don't want all this sentimental shit. Oh, and we have to respect their wishes. No, I think it was against their wishes to die in a plane crash. Let's just fucking move on.
Yeah.
Right.
That's too much for me. Anyway,
and then Saeed jumps in, and I was a little surprised by this one because Saeed seems to be more of a pragmatist in most ways, but he kind of comes forward and is like, you know, this is disrespectful to the dead. Where Jack is just sort of like, okay.
That's why I'm on Jack's side. I don't care. They were in a what do you want me to do about it? We're all in a plane crash. Their bodies are rotting. Let's just burn them. Stupid.
Yeah, I love that he even was like, discussion. We don't have time to sort out everybody's God.
Yeah.
Right.
But Jack is not really all that moved by Saeed's pleads, and he basically says, look, we're burning the whole fuselage tomorrow. We're gonna use it as a signal fire, and all those poor bastards are gonna be kindling, basically. So everybody around round table, like we're all in the same boat, just burn the bodies, right?
Absolutely.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
100%.
So if this ever happens on a desert island, we don't have to worry about us, you know, our unity fracturing at this point, which is heartening.
As long as we don't crash on a remote mountaintop and then we'll just eat each other.
Yeah, that's true. So then we cut to the next scene. It's day five in the morning. Kate finds Saeed, who's working on an antenna to help locate the distress signal that they heard previously. It says in the synapse to triangulate, which I thought was weird because he'd have to have three of them in order to triangulate something. But
Saeed is like the MacGyver of the group, so maybe he can make triangles with only one point. You don't know what kind of math they have in Iraq.
Yeah, seriously. Well, you know, that is, I guess the algebra came out of that part of the world, right?
Yeah, see, there's just stuff you don't know.
Yeah, but not geometry. In triangulation, that's all about geometry, so that's Euclidean, I believe.
Okay, smarty pants.
And the tri, hence, you know, three.
I didn't do well in geometry. I got partial credit for making up my own theorems.
I think right. I don't believe in triangulation. I believe in doangulation.
Oh God.
It's a Yodapon.
Almost made me spit my white card.
While this is happening, while he's trying to build the sort of thing to triangulate their the position of the French woman's broadcast, Hurley and Sawyer are fighting over the contents of a backpack which contains the last of the peanuts. The group realizes that they are like running out of food from the plane, and starvation is now very real.
Yeah, but can we just stop for a second? Like, why is everyone surprised? Everybody in this episode, they're shocked. There's no food. We're all surprised. Yeah. Did nobody think in the first 4 days that maybe your food was going to run out? Like, how do you not know?
You're not getting new food. You're not sourcing new food.
Yeah.
What are they surprised about?
The airplane doesn't bring 5, 6, 7 days worth of food for a flight.
Yeah.
That's stupid.
So this is the first anybody's going to say anything about it. And they go, oh, fuck, there's no food. What are we going to do? Like, we've been here for 5 days.
Yeah.
These people are fucking useless.
Yeah, a lot of them are. And it's airline food, too. So I almost feel like I would immediately try to start sourcing from the island because airline food's fucking terrible, unless you're raiding the first class cabin.
That part of the plane is gone.
Yeah,
when I flew first class to Costa Rica, the food actually was really good.
Yep.
I've never flown first class before.
I
got a good deal. It was like $100 more each way. So I was like, fuck it.
Yeah. For that price, you do it.
Like my two friends and coach, and I rode in first class.
Oh, that's
my two
hilarious.
Poor friends.
He means you, Ben. You were one of those two.
Yes.
I don't know. I just it's just one of those things that annoyed me about like everybody being surprised there was no food. I wanted to hit somebody in the head with a coconut. What's wrong with you people? Apparently, none of them have ever watched Survivor. I have seen the show Survivor, which means I would be fine in a plane crash. But I guess they hadn't.
Oh, that's very good for you.
Oh my god!
I only watched the first season. That's it.
I never watched Survivor.
Does provide the people with rice, you know. So
that's true,
and a water source.
Okay, you know what? I'm not talking to you guys the rest of the day. Nothing I say. You don't want to talk about Willow? You got to criticize my shit about Survivor. That's fine.
We met on our honeymoon. Didn't we meet some of the guys that were responsible for those weird neck things that they wore on Survivor?
Not some
right?
of the guys. We met the like inventors of the buff.
Yeah.
In Barcelona, we went sailing with them. Like,
and then
not
we got
on
shit-faced with them.
Okay. So we met them on a sailing trip, and they were all English.
Yeah.
Men. Two of them lived in Barcelona, and one of them was just chilling there. But
he was a globetrotter.
Yeah. They owned the Buff Company. It was a company before Survivor, and then they sold it to the show, and it made them wealthy as fuck.
Yeah.
And we met them in Barcelona and drank like we were all Englishmen.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, isn't that
you kept up, too. I was impressed, like, all of these guys. Nobody was small, and you definitely kept pace. It's pretty impressive.
I did. Well, it was our honeymoon. I mean, I figured, let's party.
Exactly.
Anyways.
We ended up at a hash bar later that night, too, right?
Oh, probably. I mean, there was that one hookah bar on the beach.
Oh, that's what I meant. Hookah bar, not hash bar.
Yeah. It was the hookah bar that had the like women from Scandinavia that would come around and give you massages.
Yeah. That was pretty cool.
You guys want to go to Barcelona?
It's
like
dope.
Right now?
Never been.
It's
amazing.
Wow, where the fuck are we now?
I mean, we're looping around here now. I know where we are. So now they're talking about starvation. We think they're morons because they hadn't thought of this sooner. And then all of a sudden, as you know, Sawyer starts mocking Saeed again, a knife just shpong, lands right next to him, which, yeah, that's what happens. Somebody's throwing knives. And of course, who threw the knife? Locke. Mr. Creep. And he suggests that they hunt the wild boars.
Yeah, well, at this point, I'm like, where the fuck did he get these knife skills? And why are we just finding out about this?
Yeah, seriously.
I just love the look on Sawyer's face when the knife, like, slams into the seat next to him. And he's like, oh, I just peed a little.
Exactly. And we'll revisit this because there's this kind of cavalier approach to handling edged weapons in these episodes that I see happening in multiple places. One of them happens, I think, in episode 6. But yeah, so Locke ends up saying, look, we can corner the pigs or whatever and get some of the piglets, which he says, of course, is going to provide food and don't kill the mother because she'll breed more. You know, he's thinking from a game management standpoint already, which is, I think, very, very smart. The rest of the group, they agree, and Locke pulls out his giant fold-out trove of knives.
Yeah, I was like, I was with him, too, and he's like, we hunt. I thought, all right, cool. Let's get
man.
That pig.
I just want to know, why does he have a case of knives on the plane?
Well,
I mean, one knife I can see, but you know, this was like 30 or 40 of them, it looked like.
I'd say because one knife just won't cut it.
Oh.
Ba-dum-ts. Actually, I'm going to sample ba-dum-ts for later episodes,
you
and that's just going
to
be something that we play.
That's one of those.
Yeah, I need that. That's like fuel for me. So yeah, I mean, obviously, a lot of knives. That's a little like fortuitous, but like also, WTF. So then we go to our first sort of bona fide flashback, where Locke is apparently in an office and receives a phone call. And somebody is asking for Colonel Locke. Locke recognizes the person and agrees to meet him at 1300 hours in the usual rendezvous point. His manager, who they name here is Randy Nations. I love how they have his full name. It's sort of like S. Pumpkins. I like that, adding that on to it. He's just Randy. But he walks by griping that he needs Locke's TPS reports.
Office space
reference. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, Locke is just giving off this sort of like, I hate my life, middle-aged kind of guy vibe. and all of this. It just makes him look pathetic, is essentially what they're
doing. Stuck in a cubicle job.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
To be fair, Randy's a douchebag.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a real dick.
Yeah, that's his full name is actually Randy Douchebag Nations, I think. All right.
And then before Randy Douchebag Nations leaves the office, he comments that he heard Locke saying Colonel, and he's really, really smug about it. So after that, we jump back into the present, and we see Kate preparing to join the hunting mission, and Jack is asking her why she's always so willing to go out for outings in the jungle. She tells him that Saeed had given her an antenna to try to isolate the distress signal, and she's going to go further inland to try to find a place to put that. Michael is also gearing up for the trek, and Sun is watching Walt. And I believe Michael goes and actually asks Sun really awkwardly if she can look after his son.
All these hand signals to try to get her to understand, and
it's such awful pantomime.
Yeah,
it's really bad. Yeah, and then he also was like speaking slowly and loudly because that's how you understand another language.
Yeah, that happened a lot in these episodes. It's like you just scream at them and they'll all of a sudden understand you.
Yeah.
Like, do you understand the words coming out of my mouth?
That's my awful Chris Tucker impression. I cannot go that high, except for maybe Ruby Rod impersonations.
Just punch yourself in the nuts a couple times.
And then despite not speaking English, she appears to understand what Michael's talking about and then agrees to look after Walt. Walt objects to not being included, but Michael tells him it's an opportunity to get to know Mr. Locke better. It's kind of prodding a bear, actually. Elsewhere, Claire asks Jack about a possible memorial service before they burn the fuselage. But she is sort of taken aback when Jack says, look, it's not my thing. Okay, so...
Yeah, me neither, Jack.
Okay, well... so... I understand, like, we want to burn the bodies, but would you guys do any sort of, like, in memoriam or funeral service? Do you think that's something that, like, I think, like, maybe from a standpoint of, like, trying to keep people's spirits up? Because you're going to have
would
people
I
that
do
are, like...
I mean, I don't care if any...
Everybody.
No, I don't care if
I would let someone else do it.
Yeah.
I would let someone else do it.
What do you think,
Chris? I wouldn't lead that kind of thing, but, yeah, mm-hmm. I wouldn't object to it.
Okay.
Yeah. I hate funerals.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way, just sort of like, yeah, if you want to do it, go for it. I'm going to be hunting or gathering water or doing something that's actually useful. Afterwards, Boone is talking to his awful sister about Rose, who's the lady that's sitting on the beach and who we found out had lost her husband, but she still thought he was alive. She sits kind of staring out at the water, and Boone is sort of... concerned that she's feeling shock from the crash. Of course, Shannon doesn't really seem to care.
She said, what's a four-letter word for I don't care? Oh, my God.
That's just not.
she's the fucking worst. Like, she can't even... Yeah, I mean, it's like she can't even just not care. She's got to be nasty about not caring. Like, okay, Shannon.
I would have gone right back. Yawn is a four-letter word for not caring, you bitch.
Oh, yeah, clever.
Yes, see? And then, you know, Boone sort of, you know, says, well, you don't give a shit about anybody. And that despite, like, she needs to get food. He needs to get food, and he thinks kind of like, well, if you're not being nice to people, who the hell's going to feed you? Which is, that's a good point.
Exactly. Since she has absolutely no skill, survival skills.
None.
No, survival None. Skills, but then she she uses the skills she has on Charlie.
That's true.
Yes,
that's true.
She does. Yes.
To which she says, yeah, like, I can totally look after myself. I don't need your help. So she goes and she, lures Charlie into her cruel little, a cruel little game, and basically says, like, hey, can you catch a fish? Meanwhile, Boone is imploring Jack to go talk to Rose, who's still sitting on the beach. That's really it. He agrees to go over, have a chat with her. We go back to the jungle. Locke is tracking the boar, and Michael is explaining to Kate that Walt had been living with his mother up until a couple days ago, and that prior they didn't really have much of a relationship.
Did we know that already? I feel like
no.
This is new information that, I mean, we knew that she had died, but this is like the first time we find out that they don't even really know each other, right?
I kind of got that from the first few episodes because, like, they didn't talk much.
Yeah.
I think this is the first time it's, like, confirmed.
Walt seemed not interested in him being his father.
No, didn't he say, didn't Locke say in episode 3 or something, like, man, you had a hard month? Because he explained that to him. He's like, my mom died or something. He's like, man, you've had a hard month. While he's talking like about backgammon.
We knew she was dead. It's just that we're just now finding out that Michael and his and Walt don't really know each other.
Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
It was definitely implied because he's always calling him man and things like that. It doesn't seem like there's a whole lot of familiarity there right from the get-go. Right.
Yeah. I also wrote down in my notes, I just noticed, I wrote Charlie, heroin versus sex, and then I circled sex because he decided to follow Shannon instead of doing his heroin in the fucking forest.
Yeah, and he always, he said, yes, I can fish. I can fish. I'm a great fisherman.
Yeah, I'm from an island. I'm from an island.
He's going to catch more than just a fish. Yeah, it's from an island. That's right.
Shannon, if nothing else, she has a very special set of skills.
Tanning.
Yeah,
she's well equipped for those skills too.
Oh boy!
I just throw her in the fucking fuselage, make her part of the bonfire. Oh boy! She's a witch. It's a good way to get everyone mobilized.
Is it?
Then they come upon their quarry, the boars that they're after, and this is where Michael once again shows his absolute awesomeness. And starts talking out loud. The boar takes umbrage and starts charging all of them.
Awesome.
Michael, come on, man. Like, just come on.
You don't like Michael.
I've never even been hunting, and I know that you need to be fucking quiet.
Well, yeah. Yeah. All
right. Yeah, you're right. Michael, you're right. I don't like Michael. At this point in the show, he's just kind of useless. Like, he's a bad father. He obviously can't hunt for shit. Like, I just don't feel like he's good at anything.
He was awesome in Oz.
He was. No, I love Harold Perrineau. He's a great actor, but like, his character sucks.
All right.
Yeah. As far as surviving.
Yeah, exactly. Which is really what it's about at this point. So we go into the second flashback of the show, where we're at the rendezvous point for Colonel Locke. And it looks like it's just kind of like the drab, depressing lunch area of whatever office he works in. And he's playing some sort of board game, looks like some sort of army game or something, with one of his coworkers. And then Randy arrives. Randy S. Nations, or what was it? Douche Nations?
Yeah.
Douche Nations.
Randy Douche Nozzle Nations. And comes up and sort of, again, starts kind of making small of Locke, being smug.
Well, I mean, to be fair, Randy's pretty cool and probably has the right to pick on everyone around him.
Yes. First level management is so cool.
Yeah.
Actually, I wrote down, little dipshit in the break room needs a dick punch.
Yeah, that'll work.
He probably has little man syndrome.
And a fucking haircut. I mean, what is with his haircut? It's sort of like a failed Caesar cut. He just looks like a greasy shit.
Mm. He's an oily bow hunk.
Oh, my God. So then Randy, the vile piece of crap, reveals that he read Locke's file.
Then he doesn't have anything better to do, I guess, than pick on this guy he works with.
I guess so.
He's definitely a fucking bully.
I guess so. He's probably pissed off because he read Locke's file and it's like, Locke's got a 9-inch cock. He's like, oh man. And he just decides he's going to pick on him.
Damn, he's three times the man I am.
Hold on. Does your employer keep that information in your file?
Not my primary job, no.
Okay. All right. Anyway.
So he's snooping around on Locke's desk, and he's, you know, he finds out he's doing this walkabout thing. Then he kind of, whatever. His coworkers then ask him if he's going to be taking someone named Helen. And then Randy immediately, once again, like, oh, you've got a woman. And, it, you know.
Right? Like, how old are you? You're teasing someone over a girlfriend?
He's a total dick.
Okay, yeah. Randy.
Randy.
Well, at this point, Locke just seems like kind of a pathetic old man.
Yeah.
Why are you going to pick on the low-hanging fruit?
Yeah.
Because he's got a small tweeter.
Because you're short, so that's all I can pick on.
Because he's a bully and it's easy.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right.
Okay, so we come back to the present. Michael and his loud mouth and poor hunting skills. It's gotten him injured. Locke also appears to be a little bit shaken by the experience.
I think he was shaken by the fact that he, like, grabbed Kate and jumped on her.
Yeah, I'd be shaken, too.
So Kate then kind of starts, she asks Locke if he's okay, and he ends up calling her Helen.
Who is Helen?
Yes.
Yes. Helen, a handbasket.
Oh, fuck.
But while... While Kate is looking after Michael's self-inflicted wounds, Locke is like, look, you take care of him. I'm gonna go finish this hunt. And Kate's sort of like, wait, no, don't go. And then Locke, and this is actually the second time he says it. He says this in the flashback scene as well. He's like, basically, like, don't tell me what I can't do.
Mm-hmm. I also noticed that he was looking at his legs and feet again for an extended period of time.
You're mm-hmm. right. You're right. For a second, you kind of get this, like he's staring like he's scared of something.
Mm-hmm. Right. Or he's like surprised that his feet are working.
Yeah.
Indeed, he was.
Yeah.
Yes.
So the next scene finds the comic relief, Charlie and Hurley, trying to catch a fish. So... This is amazing.
Some of the worst fishing effort I've seen.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny. And Hurley, like, loses his mind and flips out and tries to beat up the ocean. And Charlie says to him, like he's a kid or a dog or something, did you tire yourself out? Oh, my God. Yeah. Fucking hilarious.
I just want to see, like, a buddy comedy with the two of them.
I'd watch it.
One thing that I noticed about this was, like, you know, they had this whole case full of knives, and they're using the spear they had. It looks like they just took some jagged piece of metal and put it on the end. I would think you just take the stick, take a knife, sharpen the stick with a knife. It'd probably make a much better fishing spear. But
yeah, because that piece of metal didn't look that sharp anyway.
No, and it looked like if you did get a fish, you might just cleave it in two.
That's a real good way to dull your knife.
Exactly.
It's true. Back on the beach, Claire locates Saeed and gives him a letter that she found. And immediately he looks like very, very engaged with this. He opens it up, and then there's this picture of this woman, obviously some sort of love interest. And then Rose and Jack actually start talking. She's still sitting in the same spot, kind of staring out at the water. And they start talking about, like, she says, you're a kind soul. You know, it makes sense you'd be a doctor. And he sort of passes it off and is like, look, it's just sort of like, I was sort of born into this. It's sort of the business of the family.
It's the first indication that Jack maybe has some daddy issues.
That's true.
Who doesn't at this point, really?
Yeah.
Right. But I mean, daddy issues that are going to enter the show.
Yeah. Okay.
Right.
Yes.
It's like that first hint. And Rose said something to him that I absolutely loved. She, like, harkens back to before the crash when they're sitting next to each other, and she said her husband was in the bathroom, and while they're on the beach, she said, you don't have to keep your promise to keep me company until my husband gets back from the restroom, which I thought was sweet and sad.
Yeah. He and Charlie were in there getting high together.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So then we go to another flashback with Locke. He's laying in his laying in a bed. It looks like in his apartment, and he's on the phone, and he looks like he's really excited. He's obvious. You find out he's talking to this woman, Helen, and he tells her, like, he's finally gonna do this. He's gonna go on this walkabout. And she's like, oh, that's great. And then he says, like, I bought another ticket and I really would like you to come with me. Then the mood sort of goes sour and she.
Yeah. Right up until this moment, it's like, aw, and then oof.
Yeah. This was rough.
Yeah.
This is rough. This is where.
Yeah. This is where Randy is like, I told you.
Yep. See him pop up in the bedroom.
Oh God. Ooh, that'd be the worst thing. A Randy for delivery.
Ew.
Yeah.
The woman starts acting like she's sort of put out.
I was going to say, I didn't realize that phone sex workers made like $90 an
hour. $89.95 an hour. I'm like, that's an 1-900 number there.
Seriously. Does this thing still exist?
I don't know. That's what I was wondering. But this was 2004, so maybe they did back then. Still.
Yeah.
For $89 an hour, I will say some nasty shit to you.
Oh, hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
For a short time, I had a next door neighbor who did that as a side gig to make some extra funds.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh shit.
And that wasn't that long ago.
Huh.
Hmm.
I'm in the wrong business.
Seriously.
Jesus. I mean, really? Like $90 an hour, and you don't even have to look at me. I could just talk to you. Fuck that. Yeah. Hell yeah. What do you want to do, baby?
Dude, I would let's talk about this. Like, we might need to get ourselves a better internet connection here, but you know, drink some tea, put some honey in your throat, and just yeah, I'll lick your butthole. Sure.
Oh my God.
Why not? Since we're only talking about it.
All right.
And then, yeah, you find out she's just like, no, I'm not going with you. You know, I really can't do this. You're a client. And then she essentially hangs up on him.
Told him to go find a therapist.
Oh, yeah.
Jesus. I wrote down, Jesus, fuck, this is sad.
Yeah, it was. That was a really sad moment.
It was pretty bad. It's one of those moments where, like, you know, it's not real, but damn, if it doesn't make you feel bad anyway.
See, you know, the whole Colonel thing, I can see that because I actually work with a guy. We call him Backpack because he carries this backpack around and lets nobody touch it. And if you actually used to hear him in the hallway calling in airstrikes, literally, like he'd be on his phone going, I'm calling an airstrike here over this, you know, geographic location.
Hmm.
So what? People like to play war games, I guess.
Exactly. You know, that's fine. Yeah, I can understand that.
That's fine. That's fun. I mean, it's just like I might be more likely to play some like weird fantasy role-playing game in the forest. But if somebody wants to play war, they can do that.
I thought we were talking about doing role-playing over the phone. I thought that's what we were just talking about.
Well, no, I mean, that's the, we're going to start our own Lost in My 40s sex line to launch in conjunction with our cobbling business.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the opening scene of this episode reminded me of that because Locke was looking at a shoe.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very nice shoe, very clean.
I figured it out. That's what Michael needs to do. He sucks at hunting. He's not a good father. He could probably make shoes, though.
He needs to make shoes.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, pay the freight, son. Like, do something on the island.
Wow, we're off the rails now. Hey, Ben.
Yeah, babe?
Got any special occasions coming up that you need a card for?
Is this a trick question?
No, it's an advertisement.
Is this about barbcards.com again?
Bingo.
So I suppose you're going to remind me that each handmade card is only $1.50.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't come with busy backgrounds or flowery poetry?
You got it. Barbcards.com offers to-the-point communication within several different categories, including our favorite, potty mouth. And if you can't find what you want, barbcards.com can do customizations.
Can I still get all of my cards for no more than $4 shipping, no matter the size of the order?
You know it. Barbcards.com has got all you need. Hey, Ben.
Oh, my God. What are we selling now?
Merch.
Our merch?
Yes, sir. Shirts,
coffee mugs, wine tumblers, bottle openers, stickers, magnets, and more. Your choice of product and your choice of Space Bear Media graphic from any of our podcasts.
Please tell me we're not making merch now, too.
Of course not. We'll stick to podcasts, and Pixis products will do the rest.
Thank God. I bet you have more to say, though.
Sure do. Pixis Products is a small business run by a local mom, well, local to us anyway, who needed something else to do besides being a snack bitch.
A what?
A snack bitch, also known as a mom with a young child.
There's still more, isn't there?
Yippers! Pixis Products works with other small businesses for supplies, art, and other collaborations at every opportunity, including ours. In fact, Pixis Products even gave Space Bear Media our own storefront on their site. You can find us at shopspacebear.com.
Say what?
You heard me. Go to shopspacebear.com and buy something.
After dealing with Locke's total romantic disappointment, we come back to the jungle. Kate and Michael are heading back, and she climbs up the tree to attach the antenna or whatever that Saeed gave her.
Yeah, she climbed up that tree like she's a monkey.
Oh yeah,
it was like yeah. Like not she's at the top of the tree in 3 seconds.
Oh yeah, yes, very strong thighs.
Very strong.
Which you really have to have. Like, if you're going to climb a tree like that, you know, a woman's generally not going to have the upper body strength that a man would. So, like, you really would have to use your legs and core, like, hugely. And that's...
No. To be fair, it had a plenty of low branches that any of us could have grabbed onto and climbed up that tree. It's not like there were no branches and she shimmied up like a monkey.
And I can barely
that's
get on
I
my,
remember it.
I can barely get on
I
my
do,
bike.
I watched it. I remember there's a lot of easy access branches for her.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, oh, whatever.
I got an easy access branch for her.
Oh. Fuck. Evangeline Lilly is going to file a lawsuit. I mean, she get harassment against the four of us.
Yeah.
That's what's going to happen. Jesus Christ.
If we end up doing the phone sex line, I'm going to be Don Wood.
Oh, fuck.
Okay, so she's right. up in the tree doing her thing, putting up the antenna, and then they hear the monster, scares the shit out of her, so she drops the antenna or whatever, it breaks, and then the monster looks like it's heading straight towards Locke.
And Locke looks like he's ready to fuck it. He's so excited that he's like, yes!
I know.
He didn't know if it's Helen or boar meat, man, but he wants it.
He'd eat either one.
So we go back to the beach. Sawyer, in a rare act of what appears to be friendliness or kindness, offers Claire some of the stuff that he had found while rummaging he's like the CIA at this point. He's like hoarding everyone's personal documents. At this point, Michael, who's, you know, injured from the boar attack, comes back to the beach or shows up back at the beach with Kate. And then Charlie also comes back victorious with a fish.
A really big fish.
A really big fish. Yeah, that did not bear any of the giant slash marks that spear would have caused.
I noticed that. No blood at all on that fish.
None. No, he probably just found it like bloated on the shore and was like, yeah, that's good enough for that bitch.
Oh my god.
So Charlie gives her the fish and he's like, okay, you know, where are my blowies? And Boone comes up and he's immediately starts like shaming her, like, I can't believe you did this.
And poor Charlie's face.
I know.
He's like, oh no.
Oh, no. I just got utterly played.
And Shannon said, oh, go rescue a baby bird, said Boone. That's what she told him to do. Go rescue a baby bird.
Yeah, I remember that.
She's fucking terrible.
Yeah, she is. She's going to end up on the bottom of a couple lists today, I think. So there we go to the other part of the beach where Jack is, who'd been talking to Rose, is coming back to where everyone else is to start up the funeral pyre. And he says to her before he leaves, like, well, do you want us to say something about, do you want to say something about your husband? And then she kind of looks at him and is like, oh no, like my husband is still alive.
Mm-mm. I wrote down exactly what she said. She said, doctor, my husband is not dead.
Is not dead.
And she said it so matter of factly. It was like, she knew.
She was so confident and she knew.
Yeah. And I even wrote, I'm getting choked up because like her certainty, because either she's correct in her certainty and then I would cry because I would be happy, or she's not. And then I'm devastated that she's going to have to realize it at some point. So yeah, either way, it was like an emotional moment.
Yeah.
She's either right about it or she's just in denial.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And if she's right about it, like, how does she seem so sure? It's almost like a Locke moment where she's like she knows something that everyone else doesn't know.
Yeah, exactly.
Which, again, you know, being delusional often looks like that.
Yes.
You know, just case in point, look at, you know, 40% of the population of the U.S. right now.
Oh, jeez.
So, you know, as she says that, this is the first time he notices a man in a suit standing next to a tree. And I thought that shot was really, really cool because the mm-hmm. guy standing next to the tree is like dead still, but the tree is moving. And it's a cool sort of like, it makes it feel very unnatural that, mm-hmm. you know, plants are moving, but the person isn't. I just thought that was a great sort of way to build that kind of visual tension. Jack probably doesn't admire the camera work as much as I do, but he looks back and the dude in the suit is gone. So then we cut over to Kate back at the beach and says to Saeed that, you know, she had broken the antenna. Saeed takes he gets very sort of, I don't know, disheartened, starts throwing shit around and saying like, this is worthless, this is useless.
He threw the broken antenna on the ground and broke it more.
Yeah. And he basically says like, I don't have the materials to fix this stuff. Like, this was basically what I could do. And so he seems very sort of dejected about that.
It's demoralizing.
Yeah.
I would think so
too. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and actually one thing that they might've thought to do, and I didn't think about this until now, is like, they need to get those bodies out of that fuselage and they need to strip that fuselage of all of the wiring, all of the electronics, because if he's able to build this, this transmitter with that, it means he's probably got some decent skills. And if he had, you know, more raw
equipment. Now.
Well, they can still go to the cockpit. You know, that's where most of the wiring and avionics is.
Exactly. I mean, there'd be enough wiring in there where if you knew what you were doing and you had a battery source, you could probably, you know, probably figure something out. You could MacGyver the shit out of that. Oh, yeah,
the jet like that, they got batteries in them as well.
Yeah, so.
Well,
exactly.
Maybe you should wire yourself up some form of communication and let Saeed know.
Well, yeah, I don't know how to do that, but I do know that you need like, you need rudimentary components to do that.
He and said, that's, I don't like, know how to do that, as if Saeed was a real guy you could message.
Well,
I don't really know.
Then why are we even doing this show?
What? Yeah. All right.
And Kate is telling, I think she's telling Jack at the time that, she thinks Locke is dead because the monster was kind of going straight in his direction. They haven't seen him since.
There was a moment there where she's talking to him where Jack like touches her face in this sort of tender way. And it's like, oh my God, why don't you guys just hook up? You're killing me right now.
Well, she's got that big scratch on her face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's doing the doctor.
He's being a doctor. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
More than a doctor. That's what I
mean. Dr. I'm sure Love. He likes to play
Dr. Dong.
Yeah.
What?
Dr. Dong.
Jesus.
And while they're talking, he sees the guy in the suit again and starts running into the jungle after this kind of delusion or whatever it is with Kate running after him. Mm-hmm. And instead of finding the guy in the suit, they find Locke with a giant boar, dragging a giant boar. So it's obvious the hunt was successful.
Let's make some bacon.
Michael wasn't there to fuck it up.
Exactly. I was like, I wouldn't let Michael have any of it. I was like, okay, we almost didn't have this because of you. You're going to have to subsist on sand.
Or give him like the balls or something.
Yeah. So kind of fast forward to sundown. Claire is kind of doing her service for the dead people, and then sort of like giving out like whatever information she could glean from the passenger manifest or whatever like paperwork these people had.
Yeah, but did you hear the one thing she read? Something about how somebody had overdue library charges for Willy Wonka? What the fuck? Who wrote that?
Well, I got really sad when she said that there was a video store receipt. I'm like, oh, I'm so
talk about dead.
Extremely dead. There's still one left up in Washington or Seattle, I believe.
No,
I
watched the last Blockbuster documentary. I thought it was Alaska. I thought it was in Alaska.
I think it was Alaska. I think it was.
I'm pretty sure.
Well, Alaska.
Well, that's what Google's for. I think Derek is on the case.
He's in it, yeah.
No, it's in Bend, Oregon.
Oh, okay.
Well, there you go.
It's actually an interesting documentary because it brought back memories of, you know, going to Blockbuster on a Friday or Saturday night.
Right. Trying to get there before it's all sold out.
Oh, yeah. That was like pizza and Blockbuster. That was like every weekend for...
Yeah, especially the new releases. You go out there and be just completely disappointed. All like 50 of them have been checked out.
Yeah,
exactly.
So you're standing by the return slot going, come on and get the movie.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and all there is Leprechaun 3. You're like, shit.
It's like a lifetime ago.
Either that or like Faces of Death 2.
I know.
Seriously. So she's doing this service or whatever. Everyone's basically standing around this thing, kind of partaking, except for Jack. He's sort of almost just kind of sitting away from it. And it's almost like sulking. It's sort of like, well, you can buy this superstitious shit, but I'm just not going to play. And then we cut over to another flashback with Locke. And this time he's sitting in like an office somewhere and he's talking to a guy who's obviously Australian. And this guy is telling him like, you can't do this. Like, and there's, he refers to it as his condition. They still haven't really done the reveal yet. And then they do. As Locke kind of is talking to this guy, he kind of backs away from the counter and they show his wheelchair. It's the first time you actually see it. Derek, you had not seen this before. Did you know this was going to happen, or did you have a feeling that this was the reveal?
Towards about the middle of the episode, whenever they're playing that game in the break room, he was kind of saying, you can't do this. It's impossible. And he brings up a guy that was a double amputee, climbed Mount Everest.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, okay, maybe that's what his issue is.
I wrote down in my notes about that entire scene, yikes, all of it, yikes, painful to watch. And then I wrote down like where Locke was saying, you know, this is my destiny. Like he's screaming it. And I just was like writing frowny faces because it's so fucking sad.
And then he kept screaming the, don't tell me what I can't do.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm with the Australian dude. I'm not taking you on a fucking walkabout in your goddamn wheelchair.
Well, of course.
Said, oh, my insurance, you know, wouldn't let me anyways.
Yeah, clearly it was ridiculous for him to think that he could go there and do that. But, I mean, obviously he had to be on the plane, so...
It's not a rollabout, it's a walkabout.
I was thinking, I actually had that joke written. I was actually going to say that. The guy points is like, well, we can't take you in a walkabout, but you can go across the street to Australian roll-arounds.
Oh, my God.
Oh, so going to hell. So after that, we go back to the beach again, and Michael is kind of showing some gratitude to Locke. There's been some tension between Michael and Locke from the beginning because I think Michael thought Locke was a bit of a creeper.
Well, he did. But I mean, why are you hanging out with the little kid? What are you doing, you weirdo? Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, I'm teaching him backgammon and slowly taking over his mind.
Well, nobody else. Who's the kid supposed to hang out with? There's no other kids.
Seriously.
Bloodthirsty dog.
So he's talking to Locke and, you know, basically thanks him for going out and hunting, bringing food back. And then he asks him about the monster, and then Locke, obviously not telling the truth, says that he didn't actually see anything. And then they start panning around, everybody looking at the fire, everybody having their sort of, funereal moment. One of the last shots is Locke, and he's sort of looking, and then they pan towards the, like a silhouette of his wheelchair next to the fire. And he's once again got that sort of weird look on his face.
Yes, he has that look again. Yeah. The lock look.
The lock look. All right. And that's that then. That's the end of episode 4.
That was Walkabout.
Okay.
Well, it answered one of my big questions from last episode. So
it did. What was the miracle?
What was the miracle?
That was your question. Yeah. So for today, what I wanted to bring up was Locke's name. His name is John Locke, who was a philosopher from the 1600s. He is considered the father of liberalism. He was one of the first to argue that all men were born free, as opposed to ordained in their position by a god, you know, like kings and paupers, I guess. He was not solely responsible, but part of the Enlightenment age. And one of the things that's very specific about he was well known for is empiricism and his love and support of a scientific revolution, which I find interesting because the John Locke in Lost is kind of the like mystical faith
shaman
magic sort of guy. Yeah. And so I thought it was interesting that they chose that name. I'm assuming it's purposeful. It would be weird if it wasn't. It would be a weird coincidence.
I think using that name obviously elicits some like you're saying some sort of historical weight, but I also think it, like a lock is a symbol. Right. When you think about a lock, you think of a lock and you think of a key. You're on an island where there's all of these secrets. He seems to kind of feel these things. So it feels like almost like he's sort of a gateway. Like there's a key and he's the lock. He's sort of what's going to open the doors for the island. That's how I always thought of his name.
Is he the gatekeeper or the key master? Yes.
All right. Yeah, that's an interesting perspective, Ben. That's more of a literal sort of interpretation of it. But yeah, I can see your point there. All right, let's do best and worst. Who wants to start with their best and worst moments? Maybe Christy?
My two best moments. I said earlier when Hurley was like, oh, crud, now what? As they're running from whatever's in the fuselage. And then just the look on Sawyer's face when Locke throws that knife and it hits the seat next to him. And Jack's like, you either have really good aim or really bad aim.
Yeah, that was funny.
So those are my two favorite moments. The worst moment for me was just poor Charlie's face when he realizes that Shannon was just using him.
Yeah, it's bad.
Yeah.
That's a bad moment.
Yeah. She's such an awful twat.
To be fair, though, he was just trying to get laid, too. So it's not, I mean.
That's true, but.
Yeah.
I know, because he obviously learned how to fish in like 5 seconds.
Yeah.
Charlie, he just can't catch a break. Nobody wants to hear or about his music. Nobody cares about poor Charlie.
He's all like, oh, I was in this band. And she's like, yeah, no, I want to talk about fishing. Get me a fish.
Hello, everybody.
Oh, my God.
Christy, what about best character, worst character, fucking killing?
I'm kind of going like not with the main characters today, but for best and worst, my best is Claire. She's just so sweet because she wants to do this vigil and, you know, these poor people who were in love and planning their wedding and all these people and what they were doing. So I thought that was sweet of her. And then the worst character is Randy because he's a fucking douchebag. Yeah. He's just a bully. And, you know, like after the
last
4 years of our lives, I'm so fucking over bullies.
Yeah, all right. Who are you fucking?
Sawyer. Oh, just because, you know, A, he's hot, and B, he also wasn't really an asshole in this episode.
Hmm. True.
He didn't really have any major asshole moments. And then let's kill Shannon.
Yeah.
Just, all right. Yeah. I don't even need to explain that one.
All right. I'm going to do mine now. The best moment is the wheelchair reveal, is the fact that he can't walk.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
just, I mean, because it's huge. It's huge. We're in episode 4 and things are slowly unfolding that, like, this island is not normal. And this is, like, a huge reveal. My worst moment was when the boar failed to kill someone. I just really wanted somebody to get, like, gored through the abdomen or something like that. It would have been awesome. Best character, Locke. Worst character, Shannon. I'm also going to kill Shannon, of course. And then I wrote that I was going to pity fuck Charlie, because he needs some attention. So I'm going to give it to him. let's see.
He's like, you're like, you don't need H. You just need a little P.
Oh,
God. All right, Ben, how about your best and worst?
My best moment is actually the last, when they're going around the fire and Locke is sort of looking and they do the silhouette of the wheelchair. I just thought that was a really, really cool moment. It sort of ties it all together. And it sort of indicates that, like he's going to be somebody that's sort of like a proponent of staying here, you know, because it's like,
well, clearly, yeah,
these are my magic legs. Like these actually, right. You know, they work here.
Why would he want to leave? He's walking around. He's killing pigs. I mean, he's living his life.
Right. Yeah, he's doing his walkabout, right?
Exactly.
Literally.
Yeah, this shit's great for him.
His destiny.
Yeah, the worst moment. I was going to say the same thing when the boar didn't absolutely just destroy Michael. Like
that's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Like I wrote it down. I was like, when he's going on the hunt, he just keeps yammering away, you know, just betraying what a useless git he is. Best character, it's lame, but Locke. I mean, it's a Locke episode, and you find out a lot about him, that he's sort of this in life, or, you know, back in the world, sort of a, you know, what you think is a bit of kind of a pathetic person, though in his mind he is not. And worst character, again, Shannon. She's just a vacuous, awful person. Who I'd fuck, I mean, Kate, still, like, that's probably not going to change for a while. And who I'd kill would be Michael. But oh, I will say one, yeah, I will really say one Michael. Thing. I do. And I will say one thing about, like, fucking Kate. Like, even though I love her and she's hot as hell, the show needs some more chicks in it. I'm just going to say it needs more women in it, because my Kate fantasies are kind of starting to bore me.
Oh, stop it. First of all, that's impossible. Second of all, there are hella hot chicks on the show. What are you talking about?
I want to focus back on when I said bore me.
Oh, God. Oh,
you see how I worked that in there? Yeah.
Wow.
I was going to wait until the recap and said, I found this episode kind of boring, but, you know.
I apologize to the listeners. Derek, what are your best and worst?
Best scene was, you know, when Locke was in Australia and they do the reveal, they finally answer the question of, you know, what the miracle was, you know, what is, they did say he was like this way for 4 years too. So I wonder what happened to him to make him paralyzed.
Oh, well, put a pin in that, because you'll find out.
All right. And then the worst was the utter disappointment of Charlie when he realized he wasn't going to get anywhere with Shannon.
That's why I'm pity fucking him. That moment was terrible.
It was just like, wow, I spent all this time trying to get this fish and nothing. So best character is Locke, just because, you know, he feeds the survivors, but also kind of like, you know, like the fantasy he had in the office. Well, now it's reality. Now he's out there in the wild, you know, taking charge, killing, you know, boars.
Right.
And he faced the monster and kind of had that face of like, not like I'm afraid of the monster, but like, interesting. Worst is Shannon, just because she's a selfish twat and she used poor Charlie. Fuckable is still Kate, just for obvious reasons. And killable is Randy Douchebag Nations. Just kill that son of a bitch.
God damn it, Randy.
He's a good actor, then, you know, because like, we all hate him, you know.
But it's interesting that they give his whole name for such a minor character.
Yeah.
All right. So final impressions, I'll start. This episode, to me, it is driving the narrative of like, there's something special with Locke. We're not sure what this island is yet, but he has a connection to it. And I'm now looking to Locke to kind of guide the story more than I was Jack and Kate, who had like previously been sort of the top contenders for leadership on the island. And yeah, I mean, I think that's it. That's for me. And final impressions is that, you know, maybe Locke knows more than we realize. Christy, how about you?
So for me, final thoughts, Locke is fucking creepy. You know, this kind of solidifies that Locke's creepy about how excited he is to kill a boar plus all those knives. One thing I don't feel like we touched on so much, everybody's pushing Jack to be the leader.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he makes it pretty clear in this episode that he does not want to be the leader. But people keep looking to him to make decisions. And then right. two things
except
that
the island, right? That's what I'm like. The island seems to be picking Locke. And the yeah. people yeah. seem to be picking Jack. Yeah. yeah.
Well, I mean, he's got those tattoos. So
well, yeah. you know.
And then one other thing that I just wanted to point out, Derek probably won't get this reference, but I absolutely love that you have your like Yvette Nicole Brown notebook where you're taking your notes and everything.
Yeah.
You got it, Lacey.
Yeah. yeah.
And I guess from here, I will hand it over to Dr. Ted Mullins and you can give us your final thoughts.
What?
Dr. Ted Mullins was the veterinarian from Schitt's Creek who made all the puns. Right.
Okay. He's like, wait, what? So confused.
A nice, nice, obscure, but like very, very recent reference.
Thank you.
I didn't even remember that was his name.
One of our listeners might figure that out.
Schitt's Creek is great. Ben, what were your final impressions?
I remember when I first saw the show, this was actually the show that hooked me. This is the show that that I immediately was like, okay, I'm watching this show because I loved it. I really, really love the character Locke. He's a character that I guess I identify with a lot because he seems to have a slightly, I don't know, more... He's a pragmatist, just like some of the other ones are, but he's capable in a lot of ways. That I'm not, but I feel like if I had one person to choose other than Kate, to be on an island with, I'd want Locke because the dude can just, you know, he can produce. But this was the show that really kind of hooked me. And I love that. I love the scene where he's, kind of looking at the wheelchair next to the fire and you kind of can see it in his eyes, like, you know, that was my past and this is my future. I just thought that was a really, really cool sort of, yeah.
All right, Derek, final impressions and questions.
Okay, yeah. So, yeah, Locke is definitely a badass. You know, like I said earlier, you know, the fantasy is becoming more of a reality on the island. Plus, he can walk. The fact that he was able to take all of his knives and kill the boar. Another thing was, you know, Jack not wanting to be as much of a leadership role anymore. And why was he so against mourning the dead? I mean, I'm the same way, but I just, you know, in the show, I'm just kind of curious why he was the only one that was off by himself. But of course, the biggest question is who is the man in the...
I think we can answer that in the next episode. Why Jack...
I believe we can.
Yeah, why Jack was opposed to funeral type stuff. Yeah.
And maybe it'll answer my biggest question is who is the man in the black suit?
Yes. Who is the man in the black suit? All right.
And why the fuck is he wearing tennis shoes with the suit? White tennis shoes do not work with that suit. Really upset.
So I didn't even notice that. I just noticed the suit. But
A, who's the stranger? B, why is he dressed dumb? That's it. Those are the questions that we have. All right, that's great. Okay, yeah, I think your current questions are you're going to be happy to have those answered shortly. Okay, Ben. Do you want to give us an update on the power rankings? I did not fill mine in live right here. I hope you did.
I've been filling mine in. Yeah, I think Derek and I have been doing a pretty bang up job of it. You guys seem, I think you're just doing your top, your worst, and your fuck and your kill, which I think is still still good. Where we are is Kate is number one for obvious reasons. Behind her, we have Jack Giggity. And then we've got Locke bringing up the rear. As far as the worst, you know her, you hate her. Shannon. And then behind her, we've got Jin. And then, funnily enough, the third worst is the Marshal.
Huh. Oh, so
this is his. Yeah, this is his moment. This was his moment in the sun.
Right, because he died last week. Right. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Exactly.
But he's still on there. Well, I mean, that says a lot. The characters that we hate are consistent, so other smaller ones can end up on the list.
Yeah.
All right. So, next week, join us for episode 5 of season 1. It is entitled White Rabbit. It's another Jack episode, and I believe, Derek, you are presenting this to us?
Nope. Me.
It's Christy. She's waving at me. It's Christy. All right. So, next week, we'll come back, and Christy will do episode 5. Thanks for joining us.
Later, y'all.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Lost in My 40s is a Space Bear Media production. Executive produced and edited by me, Lacey J. Sound engineering, editing, and original music by Benjamin Trim. Like and follow Lost in My 40s on Facebook to interact with your hosts. Plus, follow Space Bear Media on YouTube to watch our episode pre-shows. You can also find us at Space Bear_Media on Instagram and Twitter. Or come to our website, spacebearmedia.com.